everyone. Welcome back to Friends You Can Grow With. I am your host, Matt Nesbury. Sitting down with me today, two returning guests to the podcast. We have David Mossberg and we have John Shibley here. So welcome back, guys.
Thank you.
Howdy.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
For coming back. Before we dive into the topic, I love just a quick refresher, a little bit about who you are, maybe what life looks like for you right now. Who wants to start that one?
Life's been pretty crazy in a good way. We are new grandparents.
Congratulations.
Thank you. My oldest son, and they have a 8-week-old daughter. The first of many, hopefully. And we are loving that life. Yeah. It's everything people tell you it is. And been married for, I guess it'll be 29 years and this year. And yeah, 4 kids, all pretty self-sufficient, 16 to 25. So yeah. Rock and rolling, doing a little empty nester sometimes whenever they kind of get out and get more independent. But yeah, it's fun.
Nice.
Yeah.
Awesome. David?
Awesome. So David Mossberg, I also am celebrating my anniversary this coming weekend, 22 years.
Wow, congrats. That's
very exciting. And also have 3 children and, been owning my own company. We were just talking about for about a decade now and really enjoying that, but also I've always enjoyed serving people through my work.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm looking forward to chatting today about some of that.
Awesome. Yeah, and we wanted to have you both on because both of you work in kind of the corporate world outside of the church world, which I work in. And we really want to talk about faith in the workplace, what it looks like, how you navigate it. And we thought we would bring on our 2 experts about faith in the workplace. So let's just get started,
I guess. When will they get here?
Right.
The surprise, experts. They're you.
Oh,
yeah,
right.
Yeah. All right. Well, good we job. Got this.
Go. Yeah, you've got this. But let's start here. Have you always been a Christian? Have you always, since you've kind of entered the workforce, was faith always something you had to balance with your work life?
No, not always. And it was really kind of a overnight thing, coming to faith and then just kind of eyes wide open to a new world that I wasn't used to, because before that, you know, corporate world looked a lot different as a non-believer than it does with the other eyes. And it was interesting because I had just been promoted into leadership about the time I was coming to the Lord. Mm-hmm. And that was interesting. It was in a part of the country that was not really conducive to the Christian lifestyle. It was more tailored to my old life. So I was living a dichotomy mentally. I was kind of like, wow, how do I do this? Because I was just trying to figure out walking with the Lord.
Yeah.
And then I'm in leadership. Then I'm in a place that's got a lot of chaos. So yeah, it was interesting.
Yeah. Wow. So it was a bit of a little turmoil.
Big adjustment.
Yeah. Okay. David, what about you?
Well, interestingly enough for me, I grew up in a very non-spiritual home.
Mm-hmm.
As I graduated, I actually was introduced to a lot of the Christian faith in the workplace.
Hmm.
And so I met my bride at the workplace.
Okay.
And we didn't work exactly together, but I spent some time with her, and she was a Christian and brought up in church and really started to understand all of that. And then I actually had a couple of younger guys who worked for me who had invited me to things. They just simply asked the questions, you know, hey, where do you go to church? What do you do for this? And I got to spend some time with them.
Yeah.
And then as I got a little bit on and through the courting process, my bride's grandfather, who happened to be a pastor, sat down with me and kind of presented the question, you know, and he asked me about faith. And so as I learned from him, and then I started to do a lot more study of my own, became baptized on Easter. And that was an exciting time for me. And then married my bride shortly after that. And then we made a big dedication that for the sake of our children, we wanted to be faithful. We wanted to incorporate that. And then I started to realize that, you know, you can have some of those kind of conversations in the workplace. And and it was interesting because it was a younger generation that brought it to me.
Mm-hmm.
I was in my mid-20s and they were late teens. And, you know, just the fact that they were bold enough to address those kind of conversations was really fascinating. But I was always seeking.
Yeah.
But being able to get to that stage and being introduced to it by them and then follow up, you know, how God's plan works, right? So follow up by my bride and then, of course, more seeds planted until I started to really understand not only for my own sake, what Savior looked like, but then also how to share it because it was planted very softly for me.
Yeah. Wow. So you are a success story of a workplace witnessing. That's awesome.
I'm a work in progress.
You've made it pretty far. So John, you talked about how when you kind of came to faith, your mindset had to shift as far as how you even viewed the corporate world and the corporate structure. Can you walk me through those two mindsets, what you were thinking and how meeting Jesus kind of shifted your thinking?
Yeah. I did a lot the wrong way looking back, and that was 20 years ago. And so I've come a long way, but back then I was a different personality. Okay. Yeah. And I was a little more of a go-getter, kind of a hard charging type of person. And I think I maybe rubbed people the wrong way because I'm on fire for Christ and they're not.
Yeah.
Like, so there was a meshing period that had to be done, but I sort of learned how to ease that in. And just by the way that I behaved, because I literally went overnight, you know, language, alcohol, all out. And
wow,
it was literally overnight. And I was in the place where everything around me was the opposite. So it was, I took a lot of persecution on, even as the leader, because I was trying to get people to like me and lead and live an example of a Christian life.
Yeah.
And so, man, my head was spinning. And
I bet.
Yeah, but I did get to have some conversations that, you know, were somewhat awkward, somewhat uncomfortable, but I think everybody knew where I stood. And I think that's important, is just that they know what your values and where you stand and where you're not wavering. And maybe they don't agree, but they know you're a person of principle. And so I did lean on that.
Yeah.
And that enabled some doors to open.
Yeah. So it wasn't like you get saved, you're quitting your job, you're pursuing this complete other interest necessarily. It was more of, I'm changing how I act, how I treat others.
Yeah.
Yeah. But even that was a challenge.
How do I keep my head above this spiritual water and be a leader and have success in my job and be profitable and build leaders? It was literally, it was like a tornado emotionally.
It sounds like it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So how do you, as you're walking through your life and faith and workplace, how do you start to navigate those conversations where people are saying, hey, you're a little different. You've changed. You're weird now. Or how do you, not that they ever said that about you. How do you navigate those conversations in a way that allows the relationship to continue?
Yeah, you want to take that one?
Sure, yeah. Absolutely. So, you know, for me, there was a couple of things that I did intentionally. Number one was I always had a Bible on my desk.
Okay.
And so it was an easy indication without any verbal, any words spoken that they knew where I stood, right? And I'd reference it from time to time. You know, the other thing would be just the ability to say, you know, things subtly and simply. And again, it was brought to me in that way. So it was easy for me to transfer that way. Simple conversations, say, you know, I'm a very faithful person. And so this is what I think, or this is what I believe. So starting with that and then giving them the opportunity to ask more questions. So what is faith to you? Or when you say faithful, what does that mean? And, you know, being able to start the conversations and also just the ability to bring peace. I've been very fortunate not to be too much of a chaotic person. And so, when they came to me oftentimes, you know, how do you find peace in this stress right now? It's everyone's stressing out and you're cool. Faith is the number one reason and the truth as to why I'm able to do that. I know God's got me and I know that, things will work out into his plan. And I think taking that pressure off of it being my plan and owning 100% of that responsibility. I have responsibilities. He gave me talents. I have to use those talents. But he's got it.
Yeah.
I think I tried to use my old life as almost a launching pad of those conversations, because when I would be confronted with the way they were living and their lifestyles and the things around me, I could draw on a comparison and be like, look, this way's better. I mean, I know what you're going through. I know what you are doing. I know that looks attractive. This is better. And I've done both. And so I was sort of a valid resource for that. And like David was saying, you know, the good and bad thing about life is that there's always going to be some sort of turmoil or challenge or pain that people are going through. And when they know you might be that kind of pillar of firm foundation they can come to, they're always coming to ask you for prayer, or they're going to, hey, what do you think of this? And then you can go to the Bible. It's not about what I think. It's the world according to like the creator of the universe, not me. And so I don't know. I think I kind of leaned on, because there was a lot of people going through some struggles where I was, and they would always find their way to me. And I didn't always have probably the best advice, but I tried to point them in the right direction and pray for them and that kind of thing.
Yeah. Did you see that as a ministry when you were doing it, or even now? Do you see that as a ministry?
Didn't then. Yeah. Like literally I was a toddler of a Christian. And so I don't think I was deep in that deep. Looking back on it, and I think as I went, yes, but then we moved to Texas and I started doing my, like I was in sales by myself every day, but I had customers. And when I started seeing the same dynamic with customers where they knew kind of about me just because of the way I carried myself, they thought something was different. Mm-hmm. And then they would ask me, hey, you know, we're going through some, and then I did definitely, I saw it as a ministry. And, and that's a weird line with customers and your faith, and you're supposed to be this salesperson, but then you're a resource for faith. And so that was good.
How do you navigate that?
I navigate it?
Well, like
those conversations,
just like you're saying, you're a customer of mine, but also like I'm here for you. I want to benefit your life personally. How do you walk that line out?
It becomes easier once you've established trust and you've proven credible in other ways. Then you become sort of this multifaceted resource. Like now they feel comfortable because I proved myself in other areas. It's not like I went in day one, it's like, look like you need prayer, I'm the guy, you know, one of those. So they
laying hands on all the customers.
Right. That's not how to start.
You guys line up and we're going to baptize everybody in the sink.
Right. Okay. That's right.
No. But yeah, you get it.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
right.
Well, no, I don't doubt that that has happened at workplaces. I know a lot of weird Christians. So
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and I think to partner with what John was saying, you know, I think there's such a key to the relationship building side of business in general. If people truly feel that you are developing the relationship for the sake of the relationship, not for the sake of the sale or for the sake of the vocation, whatever it is, from both a vendor perspective, a customer perspective, an employee perspective, subordinates and supervisors, everybody in your circle, if they genuinely trust you because you built a relationship with them, they are going to go to you whether you were spiritual or not. And when you become the go-to and you have the spiritual component, they start to see a side of spirituality, and particularly in the Christian faith, that they didn't often understand, because it's really unfortunate how many people are, number one, either unchurched, period, or have been introduced to the faith in a harsh way. And so that, you know, they were beaten up over a period of time for being normal or for having the expectation that they weren't perfect. And then all of a sudden they're entering life with either a fear or anger or other things towards it. And then they see someone who actually does provide them with dignity and genuinely cares about them, because the primary, you know, our primary goal as Christians is to love others. And so when we can do that and show that in the workplace, people start to ask the questions.
So are you saying that when you integrate your faith and your work, you see better results in all areas of your life, not just your faith, but also your work?
Because it can't be a switch. I mean, it's got to just be who you are. Right. So it comes out, you know, you squeeze, if you squeeze me, that's going to come out wherever I am. And so
that'll be later in the segment, by the way.
Yeah, when we squeeze John.
Squeeze it. Yeah, the juice. The juice isn't worth the squeeze. No, it is. So it's one of those where they just kind of know that you're steady. Like you're consistent, especially the people you work with, maybe not necessarily customers who see you more regular. The people that you work with see you more regular, and then they kind of see that you don't, you're not fazed by things. You're not, and they're like, so he really is the real deal. He's kind of, his integrity is lined up.
So when you're talking about integrating faith and life, because they are meant to be together, how do you read through the Bible, read through passages, and apply them to your work life as well? The teachings and principles of Jesus, how do you take those and say, okay, this is how this fits on a Monday through Friday, this is how I can use these in everyday life. You mentioned consistency. What else?
I have a couple segments to that. You know, some of it is I try and fill my week with study environment. So I host a Christian business leaders group at my office.
Okay.
And I've always, for years and years and years, had the opportunity to host some sort of a study group in my workplace. And that's been great because, number one, it also shows people that you're active in learning in the faith, not just, okay, well, hey, I've read it, I'm good, you know, and really knowing that we're a constant work in progress. But that's been a huge help. But then also going in for topical support, you know, oftentimes we're reading through a section or following Bible 365 or something like that. But oftentimes I'll go back for specific answers. And so going in and grabbing a topical Bible or a topical biblical app that you can go to and say, okay, I'm going through this human resource situation right now. Let me see if I can get some direct advice and being able to go into the Word for that has been huge. And also incorporating one of the things that one of my good friends from the ARC, Mike Vaughn, says a lot. He says when he started his work day, he would start by asking, okay, God, what will you have me do today? And really focus on the important divine moments that will happen in every day and making sure you're paying attention throughout the day. But going back to the Word, asking those questions so that you can receive the Word and take it into the workplace.
Yeah.
Not omitting it. Like John said, it can't be too different.
Right.
You know, it can't be like, oh, hey, I get into the door at workplace and now I'm the worker guy.
Yeah.
And then when I leave, I'm the spiritual guy. It has to be from the minute you wake up in the morning all the way through your day till hopefully, you know, you're kissing your family goodnight and then ending your day.
Yeah.
So you can wake up refreshed for that.
Yeah. That's good, man. I wish I could say I'm that buttoned up when it comes to like bringing it into the workplace, but I don't necessarily have a customary type setting of office. I'm just in my car, home office, but then I'm out seeing folks. And so what I've found is really just asking good questions, getting curious about people beyond just the box that you're in as professional. You'd be surprised what people will tell you. And then you sort of can incorporate, well, here's, you know, you relate it to yourself and then here's how I got through something like that. And I really pray a lot throughout the day since I am in the car a lot. And and I found that my prayer life has really gotten decent, like good in that way, because I get quiet a lot. And that's what I would encourage people, to find a way to just get quiet and get in a place that's of solace and silence and just get alone. People, because sometimes that's hard to do. And so I've been fortunate to have a car for that. And I make use of that. But in the work, like, talking to customers, peers, coworkers. I just got back from a meeting where we're all together, like all the employees. And we're doing what we're doing and training and different things. And the after meetings settings are where it is under a microscope. And so that's where you really stay consistent and people start to kind of notice. And then you find yourself talking to them about life, not just about, hey, where are we going after this? Or what are you guys doing tonight? It's like, oh, your kid's dealing with that? Well, here's what I read, you know, in my devotional time or whatever. And so it's been nice to try to weave that in without trying to be super spiritual.
Yeah.
I also pray a lot when I get in the car on the way to anywhere in Houston.
Yeah.
So
yeah, you have plenty of time.
Usually just for safety.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you have to pray around this traffic. What kind of response have you gotten in moments like that where someone does open up with you and says, hey, maybe this is going on in life? What kind of responses do you see from that?
Man, I've had a great recent experience where one of my employees' daughters was going through some challenges and she opened up about it. We had some conversation time. We prayed together and it's been amazing as she brings me updates and talks about how her relationship has changed, because she's also changed her reactions and how she's working with her daughter versus, again, like kind of like I was talking about earlier, where, you know, you get into that stage of Christianity where it becomes very rule-based versus spirit-based. And sometimes because we know what's best for our children or want them and so badly to go in a direction that we know is going to be beneficial for them, that oftentimes our presentation is not the best. And so when we have the opportunity to do that, and I, you know, it's amazing because not only I think her level of trust in the environment's even grown even more. She already knew. She's a Christian. It was just a whole nother tightening of the relationship and the fact that she did know that she could open up and have those conversations without ridicule, without the workplace going, well, look, we don't talk about that here,
yeah.
you know, and just the ability for her to have someone that she can have some conversation with without, you know, any feelings and just knowing she had support and truth. Because again, some of the things we talked about were her reaction to her daughter and how yeah. she needed to work on that, which is, you know, maybe not what she started looking for, but she trusted me enough to throw it out there yeah. and then accept that information and then come back and talk yeah. about it. So it's been pretty awesome.
That's good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I had a good experience yesterday with a pretty valued customer of mine. And so I've known him for a while, but I think the encouragement to people that might be listening to this is there were seeds planted over time that you finally see a harvest from later. So mm-hmm. I wouldn't get caught up in the now so much of, is my ministry at work really, you know, right. Is it landing? Cause mm-hmm. just keep planting seeds. But to this point, he come to find out he's a physician in Kingwood, and I've known him for a little bit, gained credibility, and found out that he's a believer. Hmm. Found out he does mission work in Haiti, and just there's a whole bag of challenges behind the curtain on that that I've sort of gotten him to disclose beyond mm-hmm. just work conversation. We hardly ever get in the weeds on that, right. But he came forth with a lot, and I showed him some devotionals that I had gotten published on YouVersion, and he was like, I didn't even know you did that. And I said, yeah, you know, I told him about some things that I was doing on the side. And he's like, wow. You know, so I guess it was two Christians that were kind of sharpening each other and yeah. leaning on each other and just being like, hey, we're part of this army together. And so I don't know if it encouraged him, but it felt like it expanded the conversation more than it ever had been.
Yeah. I'm sure it encouraged him too. Yeah. Just knowing that someone was paying attention.
Right. And I'm not so into the sale, you know, because right. there were a lot of those people that just are out there to close a deal. And
yeah.
so I think I've proven that I'm beyond or a little more than that.
Yeah. How did you go about proving that and establishing that relationship? Because I can imagine working in sales, there would be that kind of thought in the back of their mind. Are they just doing this to make the sale? Mm-hmm. How did you go about establishing a relationship like that?
Really understanding that there's more people involved in this whole process than just that one person. Mm. So they observe how you interact with their team as well. Mm-hmm. It's not just the decision maker, you know, and you and them. So I kind of made it, I don't know, humanized the whole situation, created sort of this informal, relaxed atmosphere. When I go in, they know I'm a servant. Like mm-hmm. I serve and I listen. And when the time's right, I have an answer or a solution. And I think that's the point, is not leading with the solution, is they'll get inquisitive. And then it kind of bleeds back to him. And then he sees how I interact. And then he and I get personal. And then we start talking about kids and ministry. And all of a sudden we've veered, you know, 1,000 degrees away from work talk,
yeah.
which he's become one of my, he, in fact, a couple meetings, there's a statewide meeting that happens once a year, but last year I was at that meeting with, he was there and all the doctors in that field are there. He pulled me aside and he said, hey, I'm going to tell you, I appreciate that you're not always selling me something.
Hmm.
And yesterday I said, hey, sorry, I didn't talk about the product much today. Mm-hmm. He just kind of laughed because that's where we are now.
Yeah.
So he knows what I do. He knows what I'm it's a living.
Yeah.
He knows what I'm trying to accomplish. So right. I don't have to beat him over the head with that. So I've kept it sort of personal.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's awesome. Yeah. And when it comes to people who are in the workforce, entering the workforce, or maybe looking for a new job change, how does your life of faith influence that? Does it tell you there's more to the job coming up than just a salary or just a position or a title? How does all that weigh in?
That's a good question. I'm not sure. You know, I think some people up front will make a decision. You know, mm-hmm. I think culture is extremely important. And although we welcome people from all faiths and all situations in life, they know it's out there. I know for me, my company website, we have a company verse.
Mm.
And so it's part of the process, right? And so if you see that and you become offended by that up front, hopefully they ask questions yeah. and get to know that. But if not, they're going to know up front that that may not be the right environment for them,
mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, because we do build our environment through service and love. And so, yeah. you know, it's out there.
Yeah. So you cheated the question and started your own company.
A little bit, that's but fine. But for the first almost 30 years of my working life. I did work for other companies. Fortunately, I also was able, even during the last 15 years of my work career, to do things like a study group in the environment I worked in. We had meeting space, and it was very easy for me. And again, everybody knew I hosted that. So it was like, okay, there it is.
It was not a secret.
It wasn't a secret. And so employees knew. New employees very quickly knew, you know, and so I think, again, either it was a draw or it was a drawback, depending on the person. But I don't remember ever a time where someone said, I can't believe you do that in the workplace. You know, this is horrible, and I'm, you know, I'm not going to be a part of this. So most people are just like, wow, you do that in the workplace, you know, kind of a little surprised, but particularly when I wasn't my own company. But
That's awesome.
So I don't know if I'm answering your question right, but whenever people are looking to transition and maybe they're considering, is this right for me to make this leap? And how do I know if it's a God opening a door, or am I making a decision based on money? And I've been on both sides, and it's I don't think there's ever a perfectly clear roadmap. Like it's all about how in tune are you with the Lord and the Holy Spirit impressing you or leading you or guiding you. It's hard, but if you're not close to Him on a regular basis, you won't recognize His voice. And so I've taken jobs for the wrong reasons and got laid off 11 months later because it was considerably more money, but that's as deep as I got. And so I think there's a way to really press in and get good counsel. You know, wisdom in the multitude of counselors, the Bible talks about that. And so getting some of those, your spouse, and then in prayer, just getting quiet, getting alone, and take off everything off the table that you think on surface is the reason to make a decision. And then see if anything maybe unravels a little bit and answers kind of become more clear. And so when I've done that, it's turned out different. And so there's way more factors. But I think you gotta be really lined up spiritually, and not that I hear from God perfectly all the time, but man, there is a peace and then there is not a peace. So,
And to someone who's never really prayed through that or been through that, it's hard to describe what that difference is between peace and not peace.
It's certainly an intangible quality. You know, it's something where, man, you really hit it. You either have it or you don't have it. And if you don't have it, that's when you really need to seek some wise counsel and have people help you to find it. Because I think the most challenging thing in the spiritual journey is learning how to talk to God and how to receive. And that's hard because, you know, some people are looking for a burning bush because there was a story about that. And it'd be so nice if indeed they could do that. You know, we just, here's the paper with the instructions on it. That eliminates the free will process, right? And so we need that free will to have the faith. And we need to have the faith so that we can really have those conversations and interactions with God.
How do you go about finding that council of witnesses, as you called it, or finding your group? I mean, you started the group at your workplace with the Bible study. How do you go about finding coworkers who maybe share your same beliefs or are open to it?
I'm pretty blunt. I asked the question, if would anyone like to join me doing this? Now, like Christian Business Leaders was started by a couple of other gentlemen at the ARC, and we just happened to host it at our office. And so that's a great example. But ask the question, but I think another part of that is surround yourself with people like that. I think that's part of the importance of attending a church and part of the importance of doing small group and other things like that is to build a community so that one or two of you can then take that. And then if two people get together and invite one person each, and then those people each invite one person each, all of a sudden you've got a group of people who you can determine to be like-minded, people you can pick up the phone and ask difficult questions with, people who you've made a commitment to be honest with you and really speak the truth into your life from a biblical perspective so that when you are out in the world, which is not full of that, you can kind of go back to your safety net and say, hey, and I've got a couple people that I wouldn't hesitate to pick up the phone, whether it was 2 a.m. and I was going through some catastrophe or whether it was 2 p.m. and I just wanted to have a cup of coffee and talk through a decision. It just, man, it's so powerful to have that community and to really, you know, be proactive about building that. Sometimes we sit back and we say, okay, God, deliver a couple people that I can do this with. And they're sitting in the same room as you right now, but you got to ask them, you know, hey, will you participate with me that way?
Yeah. That's awesome.
Well, and to the staying on the theme of just getting to know if it's God or make a decision or whatever transition you're in, it's important to have people that are not an echo chamber also. I don't need people to co-sign my fear or, you know, my indecision. I need somebody that I trust who I've given permission to hurt my feelings if that's even needed, mm-hmm. and to be honest, and then, you know, have enough of those, one or two, maybe three if you're lucky. Mm-hmm. And then when you're making big decisions, then you're bouncing it off mm-hmm. of them mm-hmm. and you're giving them free rein, like the chains are off on how candid they can be.
Yeah.
And you're really looking to spot something in the photograph that you're not seeing because you're so focused on one thing. And yeah. so I've had, you know, good people that have noticed or asked the right question to consider this when you're not considering this. So laser focused is bad. So you need somebody out there that's got a little broader lens mm-hmm. to see, but it's not afraid to tell you, hey, that's probably not a wise, like that's a bad idea. And the criteria you're using for the decision, you might want to rethink it.
Hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So just building that network again of trusted
yeah.
people that have helped. That's very
good. And it doesn't have to be like I think some of the misconception is we got to have 20 of those.
Right.
And yeah. we got to have a Zoom call of 20 people and like, you know, get everybody to weigh in. I mean, if you have two, that's great. That's
right. Yeah.
So I would just encourage people kind of zone in and laser in on those and go after those people. Like he was saying, don't be afraid to bring them in and invite them and be like, hey, you're my guy for yeah. this. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah. And part of that would be being those people for other yeah. people as well.
That's right.
Yeah.
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 That's good. So when it comes to being a Christian business leader, how has that helped kind of shape your view of God and your walk with faith as you see yourself as, like I said, a Christian business leader? Has that kind of changed your maturity on your faith level?
Man, a whole lot. And the last podcast, I got an opportunity to spend some time with you on. I talked about my first conversation with God, which mm-hmm. really led me to going into business for myself. And it was really kind of, a funny conversation. But I've learned to have those conversations a lot more frequently. Mm. And so changing my spirituality in a way that says, not only is God accessible to me, but I can have a conversation. I can have that quiet time. I can pray to him about the easy things and the hard things. I don't have to wait for catastrophe or ridiculous success to be able to go, thank you, God, or oh my gosh, God, I need your help, you know, and those kind of things. I can just talk to him in the car on my way to my next appointment or whatever it is on everything. So that in addition to the humans that he's placed in my realm to be able to support me, he's still there.
Yeah.
And so as maturity has grown, I feel like, again, I feel like he's with me now at a whole different level.
Yeah.
Because as a business person, you got to have a lot of faith.
Yeah.
You know, and unfortunately a lot of times, and I feel this as a father as well, sometimes, you know, there's a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
And we're not supposed to talk about those kind of things, but we need help. Mm-hmm. And being able to grow your spiritual relationship from a maturity perspective is vital to the peace that you need in order to get through all of that.
Yeah. Were there times maybe earlier on in your career when you were tempted to segregate your life between this is church me, this is work me, and never the two shall meet?
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah. Those first 3 or 4 years, it was dicey because I was trying to be accepted as a leader. And then, and oddly enough, I mean, God, it was funny, the symbolism, because where I lived was, there was a 30-mile bridge between my house and my office. So it was like literally two worlds.
Huh.
And when I'd get over there, I'd have to be different hats. Mm-hmm. And then when I'd get to the other side, I'm, you know, spiritual John, which I tried to be there. And,
yeah.
and that was a little rough, but yeah, I felt like I was like one foot in and out on certain things, but yeah, it was interesting.
Yeah. I'll tell you, it's funny. The first time I ever kind of thought much about it, mm-hmm. I have a Muslim client.
Yeah.
And I was kind of like, okay, how's this supposed to work? Right.
Yeah.
He's a good friend of mine now.
Yeah.
We speak about spirituality and biblical things. And he's a loving person. I'm a loving person. We have a great relationship and respect for each other, even though we have a difference in faith. But it's pretty powerful that we can have that conversation. And that was a time when I was like, this is probably not something, you know, it just doesn't need to be brought up. I'm not going to deny it. I'm just not, you know, it's not a topic of conversation. And then he had gone through a family situation that was difficult, and we were talking about it, and I told him, I said, you know, man, I'm, you know, one of the things I do is I lean on God a lot in these situations, and, you know, and we started talking about spirituality, and it was pretty powerful. And it opened up that door, because that was a place where I really was like, if I'm dealing with someone who doesn't have the same faith, maybe I don't want to offend them, but at the same time, you know, we can have that conversation.
Yeah.
So it was pretty powerful.
And both you guys being fathers, no, grandfather. How do you balance that work life as well? Coming home, making sure you're you still have energy, time for your kids to be the devoted husband and father. How do you maintain all these different energy pools?
Honestly, I look at it as investing in kind of the next generation, like legacy and that kind of thing. And I know that's like a big fancy word, but I really and truly, it keeps me grounded. It keeps me focused on the main thing, which is leading my home spiritually, creating people who love the Lord and know how to live as, and I have three boys, so men who become Christian men and can provide and protect and those things and lead. And then my daughter to be that example for her on what she's looking for, hopefully. And so it's a matter of the hierarchy of what matters and what's important. And I mean, the stuff 8 to 5 matters, but when you get home, it doesn't trump what's in those four walls.
Yeah.
So I've always kind of kept that. I guess been pretty proud of that, that I've kept that in perspective.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cause I imagine there can be this temptation, especially with the corporate world of, well, I could take this other job. It'd be better for my family, maybe financially, but stress-wise, I don't know. I can imagine that can be a lot to weigh when you're in the moment. Yeah.
Yeah.
You mentioned earlier the burning bush moment. Would you say you've ever felt called to the corporate world? Like, we talk a lot in the church of figuring out what you're called to do, what God has made you to do. Was there ever a time when you realized, oh, I'm called to be a business owner. I'm called to be in sales. And what was that like?
Yeah, I know for me that was it. You know, I mean, it really was kind of a burning bush moment. And, and it was just a conversation because I was going through a very difficult time. And I realized I needed to change. And God started with me volunteering. I think, you know, the conversation went like this. Hey, God, I need to generate more income. And the immediate response I got the first time, like I said, the first time I had a conversation with God, the response was immediate. It wasn't like there was a sign coming down the road. It wasn't some other time. Immediately he told me to go volunteer and he had to show me something through that volunteering. And I volunteered starting to teach the FPU class here at the ARC. And, and then all of a sudden he showed me that I had transferable traits out of an industry that I thought was what I would do for the rest of my life. And then he showed me other things. And then he showed me how to generate a business and how to do these things. And it was like, man, first of all, I was kind of like, all right, God, where were you 20 years ago? But you know, okay, it's his time. So I had to give him that. And then in the meantime, I just, again, kept going back to that, realizing that that burning bush moment for me didn't have to be a one-time experience.
Yeah.
And so it was pretty powerful.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool. I, you know, I've kind of struggled a little bit lately, I've been curious about that word calling, and I think we get a little bit wrapped up and glamorize that word because I mean, I personally think we're all called to the same thing. I mean, we all have the same calling.
Yeah.
It looks different because we each have different gifts. And so I figured out that if I can just figure out what I'm good at, and what I'm passionate about, and then how can I impact the kingdom? How can I serve and grow, help grow the kingdom, help witness a little bit, you know, and get the word out? That's all of our callings, but how we do it's different. So figuring out what you're good at, figuring out where the need is and how to mesh those together, that's your calling. It just may look different than yours or mine. Yeah. So, yeah, I think the mission is the same for all of us. So grow the kingdom and serve, and try to lead the best we can.
Yeah.
And I agree 100%. I think, you know, one of the things that I love, the concept of the purpose-driven life, but yeah. it's really about purpose-driven moments.
Mm-hmm.
And if we're in the service of others all day, every day, whether it be our families or whether it be at our workplace or whether it be right here, mm-hmm. Sharing some information that hopefully will touch somebody, mm-hmm. one person, you know, and just being in the service of that, then we're doing what God called us to do.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so good, because I love what you said. We all have the same mission to go and make disciples of mm-hmm. all people. How we all execute that mm-hmm. looks very different based on our gifts and talents. Mm-hmm. So when you were newer to faith or navigating the early work life and faith, what did you do to come to that realization that I am created with these gifts and talents and I can use those to glorify God? What mm-hmm. what did you do to walk that process out?
I think it was important that I realized what I was doing incorrectly, because I was trying to be something that I was, somebody else. Like I was looking at so-and-so and like, okay, that's how I need to do ministry, mm-hmm. or that's what I'm supposed to be. And that's my calling because it looks good for him. And once I snapped out of that and just was like, look, and I can't remember where, but you know, everybody's part of the body, right? And everybody hand can't talk to the foot and say, why am I not a foot? That kind of thing. And so you're like, why am I doing this? And so the comparison trap, I had to snap out of that. Mm-hmm. And once I did that and just sort of did a little self-assessment, get honest and yeah, here's what you're good at. Like this is, there's a reason that you have these gifts
mm-hmm.
and here's where they might align vocationally.
Yeah.
Maybe you can make a living this way. And so I've always been really in sales or yeah. some sort of leadership around sales. And it's just having conversations, curious, asking the right questions, and then serving people, whatever they need. Mm-hmm. And that could be anything, but mm-hmm. that just happened to be sales for me.
Yeah.
And so I had to get out of that narrow, focused, you know, mindset of, oh, I got to be that guy.
Yeah.
Because that works. Clearly it works.
Yeah.
And I don't think there's anything wrong with comparing some, you know, to somebody else and going, oh, they're doing that well. Maybe I could tweak and do well sure. that way too. And,
yeah.
and see what good looks like and replicate that. But that doesn't mean that I have to fit in that box.
Yeah. That's good. David, did you have anything to add?
Man, that's really good. So
I did a lot wrong. So to get to that point.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's important too. We need to be open to self-correction
and
team correction when, you know, when we do have faithful people around us who can kind of call something out and say, hey, you know, this is a good place for you to get a little better.
Yeah.
And working on ourselves without, you know, again, just hating on ourselves or creating self-doubt and fears, just really saying, let's sharpen that up.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and like you were saying, I think it's okay to emulate someone, but to idolize them is where we get off track. Mm-hmm. And I know the comparison trap can catch any number of us at any stage of life. So as you're going throughout your life, how do you just remind yourself that is what the main purpose is? How do you continually keep that at the forefront of your mind? You hear people talk about they have a life goal or a 5-year, 10-year plan. What have you done that has helped you set these foundational principles and keep them at the paramount?
Yeah, I think, you know, I think it's practicing it daily. You know, I think we were just talking about sharpening things up. You know, I think you have to be in it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I have to surround myself. The reason I tell people a lot of times, I teach financial peace because I need to hear the message that frequently. It's a difficult thing. It was a difficult thing for me, and we're better at it because I'm teaching that class on a consistent basis.
Mm-hmm.
So because of that, we have to practice that every day, and we have to remind ourselves, you know, I think again, if we start with the thought process of, you know, asking God what will have us to do today, it eliminates you being able to get into the day so fast that you forgot what you were doing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that again, we just have to have those tools around us, those accountability partners, those consistent meetings, being able to have our study group on Thursdays, church on Sundays, church on Wednesdays. I think we need to be around it frequently enough that we don't fall away from it, because the workplace will suck you into the world really fast.
Yeah.
And busyness does that, and problems does that. And, you know, all of those things will really pull you down and away from it really quickly.
Yeah.
If you don't have that consistent energy going in.
Mm-hmm.
It's good. It's good. I think, you know, living in a world of, feels like we have a lot of people writing down things in pencil with erasers, and there's a lot of things that shouldn't be negotiable that are all of a sudden. And I think as a leader of a home, we need to have the standards that are in Sharpie, like magic marker, that are non-negotiable, that don't waver, they don't change. So stand, create a standard for your family. I don't know, we have 10 or 12 that I created, and it was later in life, unfortunately. But I think you got to create those, and they don't move. And then once you've got that footing, like, yeah, you may not be perfect every day, but at least you know why you're doing the right reps. So your motivation is steady. It's consistent. It's in stone. And if you're doing the right reps for the right reasons, then you're going to keep doing the right reps, right? You're not too worried about, oh, well, I got that affirmation and validation, so that's why I'm doing them. That's not why we do them, because they're the right reps. And so even I get stuck in that sometimes and be like, oh, well, I did something good, but I don't feel like I got a, you know, standing ovation for that. But again, that can't affect what our standards are.
And it's part of that is just being intentional about finding those standards for you and your family and keeping at them regardless of the results. That's awesome. Well, David, John, thank you both very much for coming back. It is always a great pleasure to have you. And thank you guys for tuning in. I hope you'll join us again on Friends You Can Grow With.